Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
We're in the middle of the two. This is one of those deals that.
Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? Give my creation! Fly!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6... 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, hello there, and welcome to the Guy James Show. Thanks for joining us this afternoon here on the Head On Radio Network. I see the chat room's getting cranked up there, slow but sure, and iTunes and all the rest of the people, the other links all around the internet. Thanks for listening to the program today. We've got an interview coming up in just a couple of moments, actually at 3:15, let's say. Steve Rosenfeld is going to be with us. He's got a new book out called Count My Vote, A Citizen's Guide to Voting. And you'll want to hear him. He has worked hard on voter fraud and all in Ohio, including what happened in Ohio last time around. And he's got an interesting take on all this. And this new book, A Citizen's Guide to Voting, Count My Votes, pretty doggone good. And we'll talk to him for just a few minutes, coming up around a quarter after the hour here. A lot to talk about today. I want to report that having done my very own research on this tire inflation thing and tune-up inflation thing and all that, eco-driving and all, I've done my own test. I've always been very careful about keeping mileage on my car, keeping records of mileage on my car. I have a seven-year-old car, and it's very, very low mileage. I bought it secondhand, a little over a year ago, something like that. It only had like 15,000 miles on it. It's got about 20,000 on it now, 20,500, I think. And it's a six-cylinder American car. And I averaged around 20 miles to the gallon on this car, and which was satisfactory for a six-cylinder automobile that's not exactly an econo-box, but I guess what you'd consider a mid-sized car today. And so some time ago, several tanks of gas ago, I decided to revamp my driving style. I've always been a guy that liked to get on down the road. And here in Florida, it's fairly common to drive out on Interstate 75, which is very, very close to where I live. And you could be running 75, 78 miles an hour and have most of the traffic pass you like you're sitting still. Usually 85 to 90 is where everybody drives around here. That's why so many terrible wrecks around here. When you see a wreck around here, somebody's dead usually. But I decided to try and save some dollars on gas. Gas is over $4 a gallon at the time, still close to it. And so I started to eliminate. I read up again a refresher course on this eco driving and all. And so always have made sure my tires are inflated at the proper pressure. I know what happens when you don't. Number one, it wears on your tires. Tires are expensive these days. And number two, if you got them inflated right, everybody, you get better gas mileage. Everybody knows that, I think, except for the idiots over at the McNasty campaign. Obviously, they're the only people in America that didn't know that, or if they did know that, they've been damn liars and trying to say that Obama said something that he didn't say, that was the only thing that he wanted to use to offset the offshore drilling. So either they're liars or stupid, one or the other. Well, in my own case, I slowed down, decided not to drive over the speed limit, used cruise wherever I could and all that, and I've increased my gas mileage from 20 miles per gallon to 26. And that's a good, honest, long test. That's a 30% increase. 30%, and that's damn good savings if you ask me. And we can all do some of that and save a lot of tankers full of oil coming to this country from overseas. And just think of what the mileage would be if the speed limit were lowered down to 55 and we all stuck to it. I know, I like to drive fast too, but I'd rather have the money in my pocket than give it to good old Exxon McNasty's people over there. So that's anecdotal information from me. It worked for me, a 30% increase in my average gas mileage. So I am very, very pleased with that, and I'm very pleased to keep the savings in my pocket. Most certainly. I do see that there was a news story out today that this new Hadron Super Collider outside of Geneva, Switzerland, they're going to fire that baby up here in a couple of days. It's a 17-mile circle, I think, goes all around Geneva. And what it is, a big tunnel they dug underneath the ground, and they're going to try and recreate the Big Bang, which the scientists believe, you know, created the universe. And they're going to have particles traveling at 99.99% of the speed of light. That's 186,000 miles per second, I believe, or it used to be, unless they've changed it. It reminds me of one of my favorite comedians. Any of you, anybody else warped enough to love Stephen Wright the way I do? Stephen Wright. He does have a warped sense of humor, and I must admit I enjoy listening to the guy, but I remember 20 years ago he came out on stage and said, I wonder if he were traveling in a space vehicle at the speed of light, 186,000 miles per second, and you turned on the lights, would anything happen? Always loved that one. Yeah, a lot of you are saying, oh, guy, we feel sorry for you. But anyway, I heard him on TV the other day doing his one-liners, the ones that he does one after another after another. He's called the airlines. One to book a ticket. They asked me how many people be traveling. I said, I don't know. It's your airplane. That's the kind of comedy I like. Anyway, 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join the program today. 866-546-5254. Oh, yes, ELO brought up the Lizzie Borden thing. Yeah, Stephen. Well, good. I'm glad I have some friends that are just as warped as I am with their sense of humor with the with Stephen Wright. I thought maybe there are only half a dozen of us or so. I have an idea. Stephen's, as long as he's lasted, probably got a pretty fair audience around the country. I see let's check on the stock market here today. For all of you that keep close track of your portfolio, they gained over 300 points yesterday. They've lost 180 of it back today. Oil's up $1.22 at the moment at $119.80 a barrel. And I haven't checked on gold, but anyway, it gave back a lot of the market gave back a lot of that gain that it made yesterday. McCain, I'm going to talk a lot about McCain after we have our guest on today. Have you noticed that he starts off about every town hall, every meeting that he has, and man, did he step in it today in Wilmington, Ohio, and I knew he would. He says, my friends this, and my friends that, and my friends this, and you know, there's a guy, I know a guy like that, that always addresses me as my friend. My friend, I don't know what to... I'm not his friend. And if you're not my friend, don't address me as my friend. I think that's just plain foolish. And McCain does that all the time. Anyway, he's in a town hall meeting today. And he's in Wilmington, Ohio. And did he ever step in it? DHL... and one of the other carriers had a big terminal in Wilmington. They used the airstrip there, and they had about 8,600 jobs, I believe it was. I think it's 8,600. And Davis, the campaign manager for Mr. McNasty, several years ago, about 5 years ago, I think it was, did all he could do. Did all he could do to lobby for the merger. He got paid about $185,000 to help him. It cost these 8,600 people in that area their jobs. And here's McCain today at a meeting giving a speech there today, and some woman gets up and asks him about it, and he's, well, I'll do everything I can. I'm giving you straight talk here. I don't know that there's anything I can do about it. I'm paraphrasing him now. I don't know there's anything he can do about it, but my goodness, I'll see what I can do if there's anything illegal. Never mentioned the fact that his campaign manager was one of the guys primarily responsible for getting the whole thing through, getting it approved. Didn't mention that. And as you know, DHL is a foreign company, and that's why it had to go through and get congressional approval. And McCain's campaign manager profited $185,000 off of that deal. And there's old Johnny McNasty McCain out there today trying to explain to these people why 8,600 people, 8,600 of the locals lost their jobs. It's a Wilmington, Ohio is a beautiful little community, maybe 45 minutes to an hour southwest of Columbus, Ohio, and northeast of it of Dayton, Ohio. Wonderful little community, home of Wilmington College, Wilmington University, and it's just a doggone nice place. And they prospered, and they did very, very well with this DHL terminal there. But it now, you know, it's going to be gone, and all these jobs are gone, and McNasty's there having to try and explain this to people, and it didn't... I'm not sure the people there know. Well, anyway, if he's going to do the State Street talk... talk of his, he goes, I'm going to give you a little straight talk here. Why didn't he just say, you know, my campaign manager helped get that through, and I'll talk to him about it. Better yet, I'll bring him out here on the stage and let him explain it. If John McCain's this good old boy, this honest fellow, this straight talker that he likes everybody to know, think that he is, why didn't he just say that to the people? You know, my campaign manager made $185,000 off of that. He's back there in the Straight Talk Express bus. Hey, come on out here, Davis. Come on out here and tell these people here how it is that you happen to make $185,000 off of this while the rest of them lost their jobs around here. Why don't you go ahead and explain that? Because we love Straight Talk here on the McCain Straight Talk Express. But he didn't do that. Instead, he danced. He made like he didn't have a clue that his campaign manager was involved in this, and believe me, he knew damn well his campaign manager was involved in this, because old John McCain, he got the assistance of John McCain back when they were trying to get this approved. So we got McCain once again talking out of both sides of his mouth. I thought it was absolutely disgusting, and we talked about this before, about this thing in Wilmington, Ohio, some months ago. And today it's just hitting the mainstream media. Actually, I don't know if it's hit the mainstream media. It probably never will hit the mainstream media. And it seems like important stories often go unnoticed. And this is a very, very important story. It's important in as much as these 8,600 people lost their jobs, but it's especially germane to the situation that we have right now, a presidential campaign, and we got a guy lying out his ass to the people in Wilmington, Ohio, and not giving them a clue as to what really happened there. Oh, I'm a good, honest guy. I'm giving you straight talk here, and here he is lying. He knows damn well he's lying to those people. That's the problem I have with it. We're going to pause very, very quickly for a break. We're going to get our guest on the line, and we'll be right back.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year, and a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run with those scissors,
it's the least you can do.
Right now, and welcome back, everybody, we've got Stephen Rosenfeld with us with wanted to talk to him about his new book out. Everybody ought to have one of these books on their desk, believe me. And, of course, Steve hopes that you do. Count My Vote, A Citizen's Guide to Voting. Stephen, welcome to the program.
Well, great to be here. Thank you.
This is a book that everybody that goes to the polls ought to carry with them, not only read the whole thing, but carry it with them to the polls, I think.
Well, it's not a very thick or heavy book.
No.
But it does tell people what they need to know so they won't have any problems voting in this fall. And where it all comes from is I took a look at what was the track record during the primaries, which were more than a dress rehearsal. They were high turnout elections, and in a lot of states, things did not go right, and we expect even more people to turn out in the fall.
Oh, yeah, and we're going to have a big turnout, and I doubt that a lot of election boards are ready for the turnout that we have, and even if they say they are, they won't be. Stephen, before we get started on the book, would you give people a little bit of your background and why you're involved in this particular issue?
Well, sure. I've been a reporter and a journalist for something like 20 years. In the 90s, I covered money and politics for National Public Radio, the Christian Science Monitor. Over the years, I've taken different journalism jobs because you specialize in one area, then your bosses aren't as interested. But on election night 2004, I was executive producer of a national radio show that was doing the election results, and we saw the exit polls go all day saying Kerry was going to win Ohio. And then I saw the exit poll numbers flip on CNN.com, which we were watching, after midnight, and like everyone else, we just said, what happened? So I did some reporting, and I ran into these people in Ohio who started giving me some of the, well, just really solid explanations, not emotional answers. Like, for instance, well, there just weren't enough voting machines in the black, African-American, inner-city areas of Columbus, or things like that in Cleveland, and there weren't these kinds of problems in the more white suburbs or the rural areas. And so I helped a bunch of people put together two books on what happened in Ohio. And what I can tell you is there are a catalog of things that can go wrong with both voter suppression, which means interfering with people on the way to the polls, at the polls, and with counting the vote. And, you know, you folks in Florida know all about counting the votes.
Or not.
And what I tried to do was do something that I didn't see anybody doing in 2004, which was saying, well, before we have the election, what are the warning signs? What do we need to pay attention to? So that's the genesis of this book.
And by the way, you know Bob Fertigas, don't you?
Yeah, certainly. He's a co-author of two of the books I've done.
Bob was on the program a couple of weeks ago. I'm an old Buckeye myself, originally from Ohio, and we were shooting the breeze about Ohio here on the program and all the problems we had and the lovely program they had. And I wonder if you know how many other states have that where poll workers are allowed to take the voting machines home with them.
I don't. You know, this is it's hard to really put a precise number on it, because what happens is it goes down to the county level, where local election officials basically, you know, run their shops and decide what to do. For instance, in California, where I'm based, that was happening in San Diego. There was a special election for Congress. And one of the big eyebrow-raising things at the time was the weekend beforehand, a lot of poll workers took home these new electronic machines. So this whole notion of you have to have this thing called a chain of custody, so you make sure that, you know, that secret ballots remain secret but aren't tampered with, it just goes out the window.
And there are so many people, and we've talked about it on this program. I'm not a big conspiracy theorist type guy, but when evidence slaps me in the face, why I'll listen to it, and I do. But a lot of people are concerned just about the electronic voting machines, but actually there are voting problems that go a lot deeper than that, aren't there?
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. I think that people who only focus on the electronic voting machines make a very big mistake, because it's only a small part of a much larger process. This is not to suggest that there are not problems with the machines themselves. And, in fact, there are a lot, and they can be really big problems. I mean, you saw in Sarasota how, you know, all those votes disappeared, and a woman who was supposed to, we thought, a Democrat, who thought she was going to be elected, all of a sudden wasn't.
Right.
But the thing is, if you just focus on the machines, you're forgetting about the rest of the process. And literally, the civil rights movement was all about the rest of the process. And that's the stuff that I'm more personally drawn to, because in some ways, it doesn't get that much attention, and it's much easier to do something about.
Absolutely. We don't all have to be computer geeks to know what our voting rights are when we get to the polls. And I bet there are a lot of people listening right now that, and that's one of the reasons why this book is so valuable. That, like, for example, when you get to the polls, do all of you know exactly what kind of ID you have to have? Are any of you nuns up in Indiana that don't have driver's licenses? Do you have to carry your voter ID registration card with you, all that? And you've done all that. You've done a lot of work compiling all that in this book.
Yeah, well, what it is, the landscape this year is one where we're going to have a high turnout election in the fall, and the system is not really designed to handle the traffic. So it's like an old New England covered bridge that's in front of like a four-lane highway. And what's going to happen is people are just going to need to be patient enough or take some preventative steps now to make sure that they're properly registered. Because all the problems that can happen with people not having the right ID or not having their names on voter lists, all that stuff can be solved if people just now just make sure that they're properly registered to vote. And, you know, in your state, in Florida, there have been some recent, sort of fights between some voting rights organizations and the Secretary of State over, whether people's names should be kept on voter lists, because the state and the counties compile them, and if people have complicated names, there are misspellings, and whose responsibility is it to fix the stuff? And in your state, it's not the government's responsibility. The government can make a typo with your name, and if you don't find out about it first, you can lose the right to vote. It's not exactly fair, but it's just the way it is.
I have had personal contact with that sort of thing. I've had that happen to me about 4 years ago.
So, the thing about this is your situation is the microcosm of literally what is happening in different degrees in every state in the country. Some states make it harder and some states make it easier. So, the whole thing is, first is your registration right. Then you have to know where to vote, the location. You have to know what IDs to bring. And then you have to give yourself enough time, because it's not going to be a fast process. And then, even if we do all that, then we hope that the votes are counted fairly.
And other nuances. For example, you know about the flap we had here with the Secretary of State and all, with removing I don't know how many supposed felons from the voting
right.
rolls. And now most of them have got their voting rights back, but none of them have been advised that they have their voting rights back. So there's a considerable number of people walk around not even knowing that they can vote.
That's absolutely true. It's one thing for Governor Crist to do that, which was actually something that is laudable and should be applauded,
yes,
and is a complete rarity amongst the Republican Party. But on the implementation side, a lot of people don't know what they need to do to exercise that right, and it's not a simple process. And the thing is, there are other categories of voters that face similar obstacles. I mean, one story I cover, I've been covering a lot, is the Veterans Administration has been stopping voter registration organizations. They've issued regulations to stop voter registration drives at their facilities. This means that wounded warriors are coming home, and they don't know that they're not going to have a chance to vote this fall. And it's outrageous, and it's because there are barriers that are put up there. There are barriers that, for people who are overseas, because they have to get their, we're talking again about soldiers, they have to get their registrations in time, they got to get the ballots, they got to get it returned. There are things, hurdles for students or first-time voters. I wish this was a happier and simpler picture, and, for many people who are middle class and who are white, they'll be listening and they'll say, what's the problem?
Right.
Well, for people who are middle class and who are white, they often aren't problems. But the kind of ugly secret of, elections in America is that the parties that win do it by shaping the electorate, and they tend to try to shave off points on the margins. And who are the margins? The margins are new voters, young voters. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. And I think we've seen some evidence, talking about voter registration. I believe it's in Virginia recently that the Obama campaign had a rather large voter registration campaign going on, and it was sabotaged. It was a serious event.
And here's where this is going. And I'm sure your listeners are smart and can really appreciate this. The Republican Party chairman in Virginia is saying that because there's such high numbers of new voter registration, for among Democrats, that the Democrats are guilty of voter fraud, which is their way of saying they're falsifying the names of people, and they raise this every single election. Well, voter fraud is really code for they don't want black and brown people voting, and it's a form of Jim Crow, it's a form of institutional racism. But now think about this: the Obama campaign is going to launch a national voter registration drive the weekend after the Democratic Convention. They want to register millions of new voters, and there will surely be some mistakes on some voter registration forms. And the Republicans are going to scream, fraud, fraud, fraud. I think it's a very safe prediction that's what's going to happen. And this is the terrain that we're supposed to hold these, the next presidential election in.
That's one of the reasons I think this book is so important, because you can actually go to the polls. If you're a first-time voter, if you're a new voter, if you haven't voted for a long time, if you don't know exactly what the rules are in your state, it's got them spelled out for every state, and you can go to the polls, and if you get any malarkey, it lets you know who to contact, just exactly what your voting rights are, what early voting is, all that. It's got it all spelled out. So that when you go to the polls, you don't have some poll worker who's trying to cage people or all that, keep them away from the polls. You can say, hey, look here, I know what my voting rights are, and if you don't get those rights given to you the way they're supposed to be, you know who to contact. And that's one of the things that's so valuable about this book.
Yeah, now, it really, all the problems, with the exception of massive electronic vote theft on the computer side, which voters can't really do too much about except yell and scream afterwards to get rid of the bad machines. But all the other problems can be solved if people take the steps to just know that they're registered and that they're, or that their registration information is correct. So what that means is, in Florida, if you didn't vote in 2006 because you thought, for whatever reason, you just didn't want to, and maybe if you just didn't vote in 2004 because if you just haven't voted in a couple of years, you've just got to call your local election office, and these numbers are available online, and just see if you're still there. It's one phone call away, but you got to do it now, because after Labor Day, when the Obama campaign dumps 2 million voter registrations in like you know, half of the counties in America, no one's going to be able to pick up the phone and look it up for you.
Oh, that's
but,
right.
You know, that's why it really matters to do it sooner than later. And that is the solution. You know, that's where it starts. Then you just need to know where to vote, literally, the location. And you need to know what ID to bring and give yourself enough time. And if you're in certain states where they're trying to create these new voting centers, which is to replace the neighborhood precinct, which used to be like in a garage or, you know,
yeah,
a church or a storefront, you just got to make sure you're in the right line so you don't have to wait twice. Because sometimes the poll workers won't necessarily tell you that. And you'll find, and in some states, it, with the worst laws, if you're, and if you give a ballot in at the wrong table, which is the, like, a different precinct than yours, it won't be counted.
That's right.
And, but literally, it all starts with just keeping it simple. It just starts with making sure your registration information is current. And then, you know, if somebody challenges you, you have, you know, show some backbone.
Yeah, it's just not that, it's just not that hard to do, like you said. That's one of the great reasons for having this book. Yeah, you're reminded of everything that you need to do before you go to vote and what exactly your rights are, and also that you don't get caught in a situation. I was caught in a situation 4 years ago that, you know, I ended up having to get a hold of the Board of Elections on Election Day and, you know, have them hold my vote and all that, and it was a terrible mess. And it ended up not being my fault. I knew it wasn't. But a lot of people would have walked away from there and said, oh, what the hell, let
right.
go.
And it's really hard to, like, keep a clear head and not take it personally in that moment. I mean, you care. You're there to vote.
Right. And, you know, the most precious right you have, and to walk away without doing it. And, you know, they've resorted to so many tricks over the year. You know, you mentioned about these new poll places. They resorted to sending out postcards to people, hey, don't vote at Precinct 86 anymore. It's someplace else this year. And when, in fact, it still is at the old place. And people, I mean, there's more dirty tricks in politics than anything else I know of.
Well, it's really true. I mean, anybody who doesn't think the stakes are huge is really not paying attention. I mean, you know, I would venture to say that, you know, if Kerry was the president, we would not be in Iraq right now. You know, if Kerry was the president, we would probably have had a little more regulation of the subprime lending markets. And, you know, the economy might not be in the, you know, the tailspin that it's in. I mean, these are big ifs. You know, if somebody else was president, we might have a different Supreme Court.
Exactly.
You know? So, you know, these things really do matter. And, you know, and it's not, it's really, you know, people make politics out to be a game, but it's, you know, there's a lot of silly behavior, but it's really not a game.
No, they're in the single one of us listening right now. There isn't anybody across the country that isn't affected in a big way, some way or another. Like you said, the war.
Yeah, I mean, the takeaway message right now is you can go online. You could go to the it's called the Overseas Vote Foundation website, overseasvote.org. And they have this wonderful directory of, you just type in your zip code, of every election, local election office in the country, and they give you the phone number and the office hours. And I think they have emails there too. And so, you know, you're just like one, you know, click, you know, you're 2 minutes away from just figuring out who you have to call to just see if you're good to go in November. But if you're not, you don't want to be that person who shows up and they say they can't find your name on the list. I mean, you have had experience.
Yep, I sure have, and I must admit, I was taken aback by it in a huge way, because of what I do, I'm always out here telling everybody to vote, and I went, and all of a sudden I couldn't. I did end up getting my vote counted, but
well, you know, here's the other thing. I mean, just to get a little technical, but not too technical. You know, if your name is not on the list, you'll receive what's called a provisional ballot.
Right.
Now, this is something that came after Florida in 2000, where what will happen is the vote will eventually be counted, but it has to be verified in the weeks following Election Day. Provisional ballots are not counted in the results that are given to the media on election night. You know, and that's when that's when most candidates concede. So it doesn't really help in many respects to get a provisional ballot. I mean, you know, in a technical way, it's better than nothing. But in a practical way, with the way the media, announces the winners and candidates polls, it doesn't really help.
Right, you are. There's no turning back from that. You know, it distresses me. I've lived in all my life in two states, and they're the two states that always come up when we're talking about huge voting problems.
Yeah, there is a really nifty thing happening in Ohio that most people haven't noticed, don't really know about. And that is that they are opening up early voting a few days after a few days before the close of registration, which means for four or five days there will be same day registration and voting in Ohio this year. It's totally new and nobody really is talking about it, but it is going to happen.
Well, as Bob and I were talking about, you've got a new we've got a new Secretary of State in Ohio, and that's going to help a little bit right there. That was a huge obstacle and a huge problem in the last election. There wasn't much effort to try and have a fair election. I didn't think the last time, but that particular obstacle is gone. Stephen, the book. Tell us where we can all get it. I got mine in the mail. Compliments of your publisher, and I thank you for that. Where can everybody get one of these?
Well, it's going to be available in Barnes and Noble bookstores. It should be arriving any day now. It's also you can get it on the it's published by Alternet, which is an online news magazine, and you can buy it from the website directly, which is Alternet, alternet.org. And it should be going out to a number of independent bookstores as well. It really just depends on your location. We've had a lot of interest with the first press run, and sometimes it takes a little longer than you expect to get onto the shelves. But I can tell you that 2,000 books were shipped to Barnes and Nobles across the country.
Well, it's as you opened up, your opening comments were about the size of the book. It's small, but it's mighty. It really is.
I try to be. Nobody needs to get beat over the head with legal, phone book filled with accounting tables or lawyers' documents. What it is it has an introduction that talks about the big trends to look out for from the primaries, and I finished writing it on June 1st, so it's as recent as can possibly be. And what I'm talking about there is, what are the big trends? Well, different states have new statewide voter lists, and just like any new computer system, there are going to be data problems. Those, in this case, that data are voters' names. Then there's going to be the question of, will the states be prepared for high turnout? And will voters be patient enough for high turnout? Then there's the question of what to do with the paperless machines, and what's the smart way to react if you don't think they're behaving the right way. And then there's the possibility of that there'll be partisan challenges based on if you're in a swing state and you're in an area that people think is going to tip the balance, and you're a new voter, you might be challenged. And so those are some of the issues. And then, but the solution side of it is going over what do you need to know to make sure you're registered properly? What do new voters need to know? What do students need to do? What do you need to do if you're in the military and overseas? And then and these chapters are short, and there's just a little bit of an overview, and then just I try to keep it as simple as possible.
Well, you have done that.
Well, thank you. And then the back half is just individual state pages of just what are the rules?
I learned a lot from the back half of that book. That's very interesting to me from state
really
to state.
Well, it's really interesting because, there are a lot of early voting options in a lot of states, and it's not just voting by mail, but people should use them.
Absolutely. Well, it's going to be close in a lot of states this year. That is why this book is more important than it ever has been before. There's going to be so many close elections that every vote is going to count, and everybody needs to know what's in this book to protect themselves and know their voting rights for them and their family. And Steve, you've done a great job for the public on this, an important
Thank
job.
You.
And again, it's available at alternet.org, and
yes,
it's going to be available in Barnes and Noble and other bookstores coming up soon. Thanks so much for being with us today, Steve. I really appreciate it. And, Perhaps we can get together again before or right after the election, and maybe the winning vote will be cast because of this book, you know?
Well, that would be very, very nice. Well, I really enjoy talking to you, and I hope we can talk again.
Thanks very much, Stephen. Stephen Rosenfeld from Count My Vote, A Citizen's Guide to Voting.
Thank you.
It is a good book. It is a small book, and take a look for it. You'll find it around at places where you buy your books. And I'm going to give this book away a little later today. I have two of them actually, and I'm going to give one of them away. And so we'll let you know when we're going to do that. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go away.
Welcome back. We now continue our coverage of our top news story this morning, President Bush's tour of America to survey the damage caused by his disastrous presidency.
Right, Tracy, here's what we know so far. The presidency started and hit America at around 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time back on January 20th, 2001. Now, so far, that presidency has caused some $9 trillion worth of debt. It's left thousands of people dead, and still, even this morning, it continues to rage on. We have some footage to show you here of some of the survivors.
Well, I didn't think it was going to be this bad.
Arkansas has never seen nothing like this. This ain't the country. This is the state. It's just mind-boggling.
He needs to see how bad it is down here.
You know, it's so sad. You can actually hear the fear in their voices.
Yeah.
The sheer destructive force of Bush caught people completely off guard in a lot of cases.
Well, joining us now live is Brian Scott. He's been following the president on his tour of the disaster area. Brian?
Tracy, President Bush has been showing real leadership out here. Yesterday, he started the day with a flyover tour of Kansas. Of course, that's one of the 50 states in the direct path of this presidency.
Yeah.
And then he stopped in Denver to deliver a very moving speech that offered as much encouragement as he could to the approximately 300 million people whose lives have been completely torn apart by him.
You really have to admire the strength he's showing in the face of all the adversity he's created.
Bush later met privately with a group of victims and personally assured them his administration would not abandon them as they seek to rebuild their lives in the wake of his administration.
Unbelievable.
We have a clip from that speech,
yeah.
So we should give a look and a listen to it right now.
I'll be seeing people whose lives were turned upside down. I'll do my very best to comfort them. I ask our nation for those who are prayerful to give a prayer for the victims.
And the president said he has been praying every night that he doesn't do any more damage than he's already wrought on the country.
Have there been any actual relief efforts started for the Bush victims?
From what we understand, some U.S. citizens were able to evacuate safely to Canada and take refuge there before the worst of his presidency hit.
Very good.
There's also been a huge outpouring of sympathy from overseas for those millions of Americans who were not able to get out of Bush's path of time.
It's just so upsetting.
Now you see here in this footage people hoarding food, boarding up their houses.
Yeah.
And they've said, some of them, they're not going to come out until the entire presidency has passed.
Now tell us, what is the president's emotional response been to all this?
Well, Tracy, he cares deeply, no doubt. You can see just by the look on his face, he did truly love America, and to see that he all but destroyed it, I think it's just very hard on him.
Yeah, I have to say, this might be one of his finest moments as president.
You know, I think history may bear you out on that, Tracy.
Mm-hmm. Ah, yes. One of George Bush's, that comedy bit coming from The Onion. I saw that the other day, and although it's a video, the audio does just as good a job with it, and I thought you'd enjoy that. The Onion come up with many, many great pieces. I want to talk a little bit today, and we plan on probably spending most of the rest of the program on this today, especially after the news when we get going at the top of the hour. But I am thoroughly perplexed. I wonder how many of you feel the same way I do right now. We're starting to hear it. We're weary. This election has gone on so long. The primary season and all, the longest one ever. The next one will probably be even longer. Unless Obama gets elected and has a very successful term as president. But I'm tired. I'm really tired, and most of all, I guess I'm just not pleased with the way things are going. I can't stand to even look at John McCain. I'm getting bored with Obama's campaign. I think Obama's campaign has hit a lull. And I know he's going on vacation. I know it's tough being out there campaigning all day, every day. I know it's got to be unbearable practically to do that. But when you look at what the prize is, I guess I understand how they could do it. But I wish I could understand why the Democrats usually turn tail and run during presidential campaigns. You know, Mike Dukakis, I'm looking back at this a few years, Mike Dukakis was a good candidate, and he just flat out wilted once the Republicans started in with their Willie Horton smear. I mean, he just went off into a corner and faded away. And then, as you all know, Al Gore was obviously, very obviously, the best man for the job in 2000. But the Republicans viciously attacked him. And the way I see it, he just didn't fight back at all. I was so disgusted with that. And he wilted under fire, just like Dukakis. And even during that recount thing, they just didn't do what it was they needed to do. They didn't put their best foot forward. And what a shame that was, not only for our country, but for the rest of the world as well. And then, again, I don't want to let him off the hook, John Kerry comes along, and he has all the credentials necessary to beat Junior Bush. He's an experienced senator. He had a really good military record, including some medals for valor. Intelligent, outgoing. He was a fine candidate. And then... when the swift voting started, what did his campaign do? They took it. They wimped out and they took it. And they thought it would go away. And they thought it wouldn't be important. And they thought the voters wouldn't believe it, so they'd just ignore it. Well, they were wrong. They ran against a failed president, whom we now know. And I think we absolutely knew then was hell-bent upon creating this imperial presidency for himself and other Republicans who he figured would follow him. But what Obama campaign and the Democrats have to understand right now, this modern day Republicanism is dead. It's dead. It was created during the Nixon administration. It reached its zenith during Reagan, and it's now DOA. And it's damn time the Democrats start beating on that message, rather than trying to move to the center on everything. They don't have to move to the center on everything. America is tired of this radical conservatism that's been plaguing us for how long now? And I think, just as in that comedy piece we just listened to, the people have seen the devastation on the economy, on our military, and our standing in the world, thinking people know we can't take any more of this. The country won't be able to stand it. That's why I believe, and damn the prognosticators and all the Democratic strategists, that's why I believe it's time to go on the attack. I feel it's a terrible mistake for Obama to move to the center and try and placate those on the right. He will never get them to back him. He's wasting his time, he's wasting his money going after anyone on the right. He needs to appeal to those on the left, and on the left center, and also, and most importantly right now, the masses who have never been involved in politics before. And I know they're going to have a massive registration campaign, and that's a great thing. But they've got to get these neutral voters to come in to his position. And he has to do that by making this election a referendum on the Bush administration and everyone who went along with him on his warped agenda, and that includes John McNasty McCain. He has to constantly remind the American public of this terrible devastation Bush has wrought upon this nation. And he's got to remind him in every statement he makes that McCain is nothing more than an extension of the Bush administration, probably even worse. He's got to hammer that home. No more Mr. Nice Guy. I see this happening again. I saw the Kerry campaign start out strong. I saw the Al Gore campaign. I saw the Dukakis campaigns all start out strong and wilted down the stretch. And that's what I see happening right now. And I hope they've got better things in mind than what I'm seeing right now in the Obama campaign. But Obama must not allow the media to keep saying that there isn't that much difference between the two candidates and their positions. Obama's got to declare that it's a difference between night and day. The Republican position on almost every issue you can name is the polar opposite of what's good for America. I think the Bush administration has proven that. And Obama must declare that every time he gets up to speak, he's got to tell the voting public that. Don't fall for that Republican trick of letting them draw you into another defend yourself campaign. That is not going to work again. Don't be on the defensive. It doesn't work. Go on the attack. Do it long and do it hard and don't let up for one single day. And besides that, get all of your surrogates to attack the Bush administration and remind the voters of just how bad these Republicans have been for the citizens of this country. George Bush, George Bush, George Bush. Everyone knows what a failure he's been. They can associate catastrophic failure in this country with George Bush. So every single day, mention George W. Bush first and then tie him to John McNasty McCain every time you get up on the stump. Remind him of how radical, and I mean radical, the present leaders of the Republican Party are. You know, just like that story we told you earlier about Davis, the campaign manager. Campaign manager for John McNasty McCain. Helped cause that loss of 8,600 jobs down at Wilmington, Ohio. And here he is, the campaign manager for John McNasty McCain, and there are no explanations to those people there? Remind them of that kind of stuff every single day. Hit them over the head with it. Remind them that Dick Cheney's leaked the name of a CIA operative for political gain. Remind them that Dick Cheney and Bush have suggested painting a U.S. plane in U.N. color so it could be shot down by Saddam Hussein and therefore they could start their war. Remind them about Scooter Libby. Remind them that Cheney wanted to dress up some of our Navy SEALs in Arab Guard so he could get the war that he wants so desperately with Iran. Hit them, and hit them hard. Remind them that Cheney has been the master manipulator in this whole mess. Remind them that Donald Rumsfeld was brought in to direct Bush's war, and that he taught Cheney everything he knows, how to lie, how to cheat, and how to coerce the American public to do their bidding. Remind them of that every time you get on the stump, every time you get up in front of the press, every time the cameras and microphones are there. Don't let up. And don't forget the architect, Karl Rove, and the schemes that he was involved in. Downright anti-American treasonous bastard that he is. Remind them of that. Link them to John McNasty McCain at every opportunity. They think they might not know what John McCain is, but they know what George Bush is. They know what the Bush administration has done, and whether they want to admit it or not, they know he's been an abject failure, and they know that what a crooked administration this is. So many, many of them are saying, well, yeah, maybe we were wrong about George Bush. They won't use the word wrong. Maybe he wasn't quite what we thought he would be. Well, far from it, I would say. And that's why it's important not to let that go. That's why it's important to these voters that maybe don't know what McCain is. They think you better. They better be reminded he's another George Bush, maybe worse. They better be reminded of that every single day. And remind them of the likes of Tom DeLay. They remember these things. Bring it up. Bring it up how he brought the House of Representatives down to the gutter politics that he practiced and is still out there preaching. Now is the time to go on the attack. McCain cannot stand up to the charge that he's nothing but a clone of the Bush administration. He's proposing nothing different at all. Nothing. Remember that he voted with Bush 91% of the time, and he was proud to say so. Maverick my ass. Use Bush. Bush as your biggest weapon against McNasty McCain. It will work. I know the public is stupid, but they can't possibly be that stupid, can they? Bring it up every day. Everybody, every day. Don't, just because he's a lame duck president, don't let that go. I know a lot of political strategists who think I'm all wet on that. Well, he's a lame duck, and Bush isn't running in this election, so let's put the focus on McCain. Well, Bush is running in this election. Don't kid yourself. That Republican radicalism that has infected and infested this government for the last 30 years or more is running again. And if you want to finally put a stake in the heart of that monster, you just keep bringing it up about George Bush and what failures they've been and drive that stake in the heart of that Republican radical monster and kill it. Now, I don't believe in a one-party system as the Republicans do. I do not. I want there to be a thriving Republican Party to keep the Democrats honest. I want there to be a Republican Party like there used to be. I've not agreed with their ideology, never in my life. But there was a time when I thought the parties, oh yes, problems on both sides with criminals and all that, but there was a time that the two-party system in this country really worked. And they did keep each other honest. So, don't make the mistake of thinking I want to kill this radical republicanism and have a one-party system, because I don't. Because if we had a one-party system and it were the Democrats, they'd end up being just as corrupt and rotten as the Republicans are right now. So, it's this particular ideology that I worry about. And if we kill it off with this McCain campaign and get rid of a few of these senators that are running and take control of the Senate and show these Republicans how to govern, as we have done in the past, once again, Democrats coming in to sweep up and mop up the awful mess left by Republicans, both in the White House and in the Capitol building. And I realize it's a strong challenge. I realize it's a job, is the degree of difficulty, we'll be hearing a lot of that lately, they're coming up soon in the Olympics, but the degree of difficulty is astronomical. But it's got to be done. And if it's going to be done, it's going to be done by the Democrats. Warts and all, the Democrats. And I'm not going to sit here and preach to you that I think the Democrats are holier than thou and they have no problems. They do. We've got tremendous problems with the Democratic Party leadership right now. Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, neither one of them deserve to have the jobs they have. Neither one of them have had the courage to do what it takes to actually be in leadership of the party. That's going to have to change if we're going to get anything done. So I do not want to sit here and preach that I think the Democrats have done everything right and the Republicans have done everything all wrong, although I can't think of much that Republicans have done right. I can think of a lot of things the Democrats have done wrong. We need change. We need real change. We don't need anybody just saying we need change. We need to effect actual change in the government of the United States. And nobody's going to do that but you and I. We cannot depend on the politicians to do it. We have to put people in who we think will do the job, and then we have to keep their feet to the fire and make sure they do it and not give them empty threats about impeaching them or voting them out. We actually have to do it. We have to show the leaders of this country that once again they must become accountable to the people of the United States, accountable to you and to me, and they have to follow the Constitution and they have to follow the law and that they are not above it. That's why I believe it is imperative that Barack Obama be elected to the presidency. I don't agree with Barack Obama on everything. There's a lot of things I don't agree with him in, but I agree with John McCain on nothing. I don't even respect his candidacy at all. I don't respect the way he's run his personal life. I don't respect the way he's run his candidacy. And I don't respect the lies and prevarication that he's come up with in the last couple of weeks. So, my little speech is over, I guess, for now. But I want the Obama people to please, please, don't fall into that trap once again of sitting back and taking and say, oh, well, maybe we better not say anything because the people won't like it if we fight back and we sound mean. If you get, well, in politics, it's an eye for an eye. There's no other way around it. It's not a non-contact sport, and if you get attacked the way he's been attacked lately, go for it. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We're going to be back in just a few after the news, so don't go away. We've got a lot of interesting things to talk about.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. United Food and Commercial Workers Local 1518 in Canada says Walmart may close a garage in Gatineau when workers there get their first collective bargaining agreement. The UFCW says Walmart has hinted it will close the garage. The workers are awaiting their first collective bargaining agreement from a binding arbitration process they unionized in 2005. The union says it expects a contract to be imposed soon, making it the first at a North American Walmart. Walmart closed a store in Jonquière after workers there formed a union. The battle between the California State Controller, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, and the state legislature that has state workers caught in the middle continues to heat up. Jesse Russell reports.
Last week, California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger slashed the wages of some 235,000 state workers to the federal minimum because the state legislature is 8 weeks overdue in passing the state budget. Schwarzenegger said the state needed to cut the wages in order to save money, but on Wednesday, State Controller John Chiang said the state, even with the full worker wages, has enough money to make it until October. The governor's administration has expressed concern over the new numbers coming out of the controller's office and is examining them carefully. Chiang had previously said he will not follow through with the executive order. The Department of Personnel Administration sent a letter to Chiang on Tuesday with the names of 48,000 workers who will not have wages cut because they are deemed essential. Those workers include firefighters, state police, water resource workers, and military officers, among others. A number of other professionals, including lawyers and doctors, could receive no pay because there are no wage protections for them that state that they should receive at least the minimum.
The AFL-CIO's Executive Council meeting in Chicago says three more National Education Association locals have affiliated with the Labor Federation. They're in Santa Maria, California, Kenosha, Wisconsin, and Massachusetts. AFL-CIO President John Sweeney says the groundbreaking arrangement with the NEA, allowing its locals to affiliate with the AFL-CIO, means greater collaboration in the fight for a better future for the next generation. Also at the Chicago meeting, the AFL-CIO announced three new members on the executive council that runs the federation. They are AFT President Randy Weingarten, Matthew Loeb, President of the International Association of State and Theatrical Employees, and Jill Levy, President of the American Federation of School Administrators.
Here is today's economic report. Bad news for Freddie Mac on Wednesday suggests that the country hasn't seen the end of the fallout from the housing crisis. The government-chartered firm said it had a net loss of $821 million. The loss was three times more than what analysts had forecasted. The firm doubled reserves for future mortgage losses to $2.8 billion. This is Freddie Mac's fourth straight quarterly loss.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Every vet respects John McCain's war record. It's his record in the Senate that I have a problem with. He wants us to keep spending $10 billion a month in Iraq, just like Bush. That's money we could use to build schools and roads and create needed jobs here at home. He even took sides with Bush against increasing health care benefits for veterans. People should let John McCain know. His agenda is not what we need. Not now.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Is my creation! Life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. Six. Five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey there, welcome back to the Guy James Show. So good to have you along this afternoon, coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful southwest Florida, Fort Myers, Naples area. A beautiful day here, sunshiny day. The palm trees are a-waving, the waters a-lapping at the shore, and it is a gorgeous, gorgeous day. And I hope it's nice where you are as well. Another 2.5 weeks, we'll be heading to Denver. Hope we have nice weather out there. Heading out for the convention. I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to seeing a lot of my friends. Mark Levine's going to be there. Of course, Peter B. will be there. John Elliott will be there. And we'll get together and just have a good old time, I'm sure. And a good old time to folks like Peter B. and Mark and John Elliott and myself and others who are going to be there is doing our show from there and then getting back, you know, getting together and telling our lies afterwards. Yeah. We have a good time. We do. We have a good time. There's that certain fraternity that, and I do not include Ed Schultz in that group, by the way. If I told you what happened at the last event I went to with him, you would never believe me. Maybe I did tell you and forgot. I don't know. Anyway, I have a question for you, and I hope you'll give us a call and let us know how you feel about this. You know, there's been a lot of talk the past couple of days about the Iraqis having $79 billion in the bank around the world while we're spending $12 billion a month in their country. It probably wouldn't be so bad, but we're broke, and here we've taken another country to raise. The point is, and I understand that, I understand why people are complaining, but we shredded their economy, we shredded their entire infrastructure, we caused massive unemployment there, we destroyed their army, we killed at least a couple hundred thousand of their citizens and caused hundreds of thousands more to have to leave their own country, and now we're bitching about have to pay for rebuilding and funding all of that. How do you feel about that? Do you think that's something we should do? I think we have a moral obligation to help rebuild their country. I do. Who knows? And we were talking about how before the break how important it is to keep bringing up George Bush. Just because he's a lame duck, just because his administration is on the way out the door, doesn't mean that if McNasty McCain gets elected, that type of administration will be out the door, because it won't. It'll be more of the same. You know that. I know that. Everybody ought to know that, but they don't. It's said that those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it, but with these McNasty voters, we've got millions of people who do know the history and are doomed to repeat it. So it's kind of odd. And my question, I guess, is why is it so difficult for so many Americans to see things as they are? I just wonder that so often. I know a guy from Northeast Ohio. I know him well. And he'll tell you that there is no recession. He'll say to you the restaurants are full and there's lots of cars on the highway, so things aren't that bad at all. It's just all hype coming from the Democrats. He'll tell you this. Actually believe in it. When the new Forbes magazine says Cleveland, Canton, and Youngstown, Ohio are listed as dying cities. Actually, three of the top six, with Canton, Ohio being number one. Now, it is a fact that these cities are dying. It is a fact that they've all hemorrhaged jobs in the last few years. The steel mills and the manufacturing jobs that paid good money, they're gone. And all you have to do is open your eyes and look at the decay in those cities that he lives. He lives within 5 miles of one of them. And he still won't see it. Why? Why does this man think his eyes are lying to him? He's a very intelligent guy. Very intelligent. But why can't he see that the area where he lives lies in ruins? I'll tell you why. Because he's a hardcore conservative Republican. That's why. He voted for Bush twice, and he will adamantly explain to you that John McNasty McCain is the man for the job now, knowing what we already know has happened in the past 8 years. A total, total divorce from reality. Why is it so difficult for so many Americans to not be able to see what's happening in front of their own eyes? Why is it so difficult for so many Americans to understand that what affects the nation in such an adverse way that is eventually going to affect them? I don't get it. I don't understand. I really don't get it. Do you? I mean, these people, this Bush administration and the Reagans and the McCain people, they haven't behaved in the way that they've behaved because they're bad conservatives. They've emptied the treasury. They've transferred the wealth of this nation to their friends. They've created the imperial presidency that they wanted. They protected themselves from the laws of the land because they're good conservatives. They've done what their forefathers in the conservative movement would consider great work. I'm fascinated by it. I really am. I guess I must be, or I wouldn't continue doing what I'm doing. But pertaining to the other question I gave you about how do you feel about Iraqis having all this money, I heard I had a cut here someplace. Yeah, Jack McCafferty with Wolf Blitzer, talking about this very thing. Listen to this off of CNN.
We have a $482 billion deficit coming up in this country, so I think we should be reimbursed for years of support. I don't just think they should start ponying up now. I think it needs to be retroactive.
Who caused the damage to the infrastructure to begin with? Well, I disagree with you on that, Jack. The state of the Iraqi infrastructure before we went in, before we dropped one bomb, was deplorable. It was far worse than any damage that we did during the war.
Are you suggesting
that
a five-year war has helped things over there?
No, I'm not suggesting a five-year war has helped things necessarily, although the reconstruction has. But most of the damage that was done to the Iraqi infrastructure was done well before the U.S. came. And you could complain that the U.S. intelligence community missed a lot of that, didn't know it, whereas journalists who were in country knew about the state of the infrastructure. We really didn't.
You know, just like the WMD, right?
Well, they missed that, too.
So the journalists knew all this and didn't tell us once again, right? I looked up some information and just what that Republican Hayes was talking about right there, about how everything was destroyed before we got there. In education, according to a 2005 analysis by the United Nations University, since the 2003 invasion, 84% since the invasion, 84% of Iraq's higher education institution had been burned, looted, or destroyed. Medical care. Before the U.S. invasion, there were 34,000 doctors registered in Iraq. 20,000 of them have left since then. Ministry of Health officials said it's definitely much worse now than it was before the war. Iman Hassim, a Ministry of Health official who oversees the country's 185 public hospitals, told the New York Times that. Electricity. Although the average hours of electricity each day across Iraq have increased since the invasion, the number in Baghdad has decreased to 10.6 hours each day, down from 16 to 24 before the war. Oil production. Since the U.S. invasion, Iraq's oil infrastructure has been hampered by post-conflict sabotage, with more than 450 attacks on its pipelines. Only as recently as May has Iraq been able to return to its pre-war crude oil production level. So it is pure folly to suggest that we haven't had a profound effect on the economy of Iraq with this war and their infrastructure. So how do you feel about it? Do you feel that we should help to repay, or do you think we should take get their $79 billion and make them pay for all the damage that we've done, plus other damage there? Who knows? Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
50 attacks on its pipeline.
Hello?
Hello.
Are you on?
Yes, we are.
Okay, I guess I got a feedback.
Oh.
This is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita.
Did you ever hear that song, Wow, 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 Why Did I Ever Leave Ohio?
No.
You know, it's from a Broadway show. I'm sorry, I'm just being facetious.
No, I didn't hear that.
No, I believe that we should help them, but I believe we should supply them with the money and let them do it theirself and get out of there. Let us get out of there.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I never did understand when they went in there, they destroyed their financial system, you know, they destroyed them and reprinted new money because the other had Saddam Hussein's picture.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was a basic reason, don't you?
Well, that certainly was a lot of it. But
with the reasoning of the people we have now, I mean, you know, like a Bush and keeping one of his guns in his Oval Office, you know, like he did it.
Sure. I wonder how many people have thought of this. You know, if the Iraqis paid for their own reconstruction, if they took that $79 billion and spend it on bridges and roads and schools and hospitals and all that, then they would no doubt hire whichever contractors they would like to have do it.
Right.
As long as the Americans are spending our money there, we can have Halliburton and KBR and Bechtel and all the Bush's buddies take their cut out of that. Blackwater and all that, they can take all the money they want, so the graft and corruption by the Bush buddies will continue. That's got to be a big part of the reason.
Yeah, and we're lost so much money, but I'd like to see some money being put to good use.
I sure would, too.
The only thing they've done over there is build that huge...
Oh, the embassy, the largest embassy in the world, the green zone thing.
Yeah, I mean, and they've got like a luxury over there. But no, those people, my heart breaks for them almost every day, I tell you. Because, you know, going through the hurricanes here and, you know, being without lights for a week or so or even longer, it's nothing what those people have gone and they've been promised and promised and promised things. And, of course, they know now that it's not going to be done.
Absolutely.
That's not this guy.
I saw a guy over there, somebody from the press, had a cameraman, and he was filming things in the streets of Baghdad, one of these walls that they've built to separate the communities there, which has helped calm down the violence. But a very angry Iraqi gentleman came out and got him and said, come with me, come with me. And he took him down to the street where he lives, raw sewage running through the street.
Yeah.
And nobody sees that. They didn't want anybody to see that. And he demanded that you take a picture of this and show it to the American people.
Right.
So.
Well, you know, I did see one time a couple of years ago they showed where this hospital had been built, supposedly at Laura's request.
Mm-hmm.
And it has sewage running inside of it. Of the hospital.
We also had testimony right on this program from people, live interviews from Iraq. It's been a while now, but I'm trying to think of the gentleman's name. A live columnist from Iraq telling us that he drove by schools and hospitals that had been built that had three walls, front and sides, no back, no insides or anything, and they were
just for show.
Looked like a movie set.
Oh my!
Yeah. So.
Well, I know that most of that money is not gone for the Iraqi people.
Well, untold millions and billions have gone into the pockets of people like Blackwater and Halliburton and Bechtel and KBR. So.
I definitely think, but I think we should even along those people are smart.
Yeah.
They know what to do.
Oh, yeah.
They know how to do. And you know, wouldn't it be great that country could be have their lights by solar?
Mm-hmm. You know, well, they've certainly got enough sunshine over there, don't they?
Right.
Oh, yeah.
My heart just goes out to them, I'll tell you.
Yeah, mine does too.
And you know, we did it. You know, me and you didn't do it, but our country did it in our name.
Right, right.
Oh, I'll tell you.
Juanita, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you.
You're welcome, and I'll send you something about that song sometime.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, you take care. Bye-bye.
Ah, it's good to hear from Juanita. It must have been terribly, terribly embarrassing for McCain today in Wilmington, Ohio. That's one of the biggest faux pas that I have seen, and I hope the mainstream media, I'm sure Oberman will go at it tonight and all this. We reported on this some months ago, but the press. Let me read a little bit of the story. I think this came off of Think Progress. Yeah. Today, Senator John McCain in Wilmington, Ohio, and being forced to address DHL's merger with Airborne Express, which may cost roughly 8,000 jobs in the area, in a private meeting, residents will ask McCain for help in stopping DHL's proposal to quit using the airport as a hub, which would put their air park out of business. In a town hall on July 9th, a resident asked McCain what he would do to mitigate the merger's effect on the area. I want to be able to keep our nonprofits alive, she said, crying. McCain said the impact of the merger on the area is a terrible blow. McCain, this is a terrible blow. If there's an antitrust implication that's associated with this, I would seek a thorough investigation. I've got to look you in the eye and give you some straight talk. I don't know if I can stop it or not. Well, he knows damn well he can't stop it. He knows damn well he would not stop it because he knows damn well he helped it come to fruition. So, campaign manager, Davis, lobbied the Senate to accept the proposal by DHL to buy Airborne Express for $1.05 billion. And he got paid $185,000 for it. And McCain took steps that helped Davis's clients. And believe it or not, the guy fighting against it was Ted Stevens from Alaska. And George Voinovich, Republican from Ohio, called the situation one of the worst job catastrophes that any community in this nation is facing. So the question is, will McCain deliver any straight talk about the role that he and his campaign manager had in helping shuttle through that DHL deal? Well, I don't think so. I don't think so. And I have to admit, I laughed out loud when I saw John McNasty McCain speaking at the Sturgis rally earlier this week. Now, I'm no stranger to Sturgis. I've been there, riding my 650 Triumph Bonneville a number of years ago, and then again with my 750 Triumph Trident. Always rode English motorcycles. Liked them. So I was a little out of place with all the Harleys up there. But it was always interesting to go up to that area during this time of year when Sturgis was taking place, because coming into Sturgis and leaving Sturgis for 1,000 miles, there's hundreds and hundreds of motorcycles every day on the road. From the time you got to, like, Chicago and all the way to Montana, there were just motorcycles all over the interstate. Anyway, Sturgis is a big deal. And he flies in on his wife's private jet and starts yelling to the crowd that the Congress needs to get to work. And I watched that and I thought, wait a minute. You, John McNasty McCain, fly into town on a private jet, or as close as you can on a private jet, and get shuttled over there. And you demand that the Congress get to work? Let me ask you, Mr. McCain, how much work have you done in the United States Congress this year? And haven't you missed the most votes of anyone this year? And I might add, including two very important votes about repealing big oil tax breaks and the promotion of wind and solar power, both of which failed by one vote. That's some great work right there. And speaking of working, you who are exhorting everybody else to get to work, like you're Mr. Roll-Up-My-Sleeves and Hard-Working Man yourself, Mr. John McCain, speaking of working, didn't you divorce your first wife who was crippled and marry yourself a really rich gal, young enough to be your daughter, and somebody able to support you for the rest of your life, and you really haven't worked again since, except being a leech off of the public? You telling everybody to get to work? You who have missed the most votes this year? Yelling at others to get to work when you married your money? And you married your financial security? Man, if you aren't a typical Washington hypocrite, I don't know who is. And did you notice? While Mr. McCain was at Sturgis, he had a few photo ops with himself and his wife up on the stage. You know, he volunteered her, all that kind of crap about getting in the Miss Buffalo Chip contest, the naked contest they have up there. And yes, they showed some people with bathing suits, but I've seen that contest and I know how it ends up. And he did volunteer his wife to be in that thing, albeit probably with tongue in cheek. But did you notice in all these photo ops that he had that he didn't have any pictures taken with any of the bald-headed, tattooed guys with the scarves on their head and wearing their leathers? Didn't have his picture taken with any of those guys. The only pictures I saw him with motorcyclists, with guys with clean cut, with clothes from Fifth Avenue on, now, which is, you know, looked kind of weird to me. If you'd been to Sturgis, you wouldn't understand exactly what I'm talking about. I just thought that was kind of strange. But, you know, here you got Johnny Boy McCain always wearing that same checkered blue shirt, telling everybody to get to work, I mean, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with being rich. I'd like to be rich myself. But for John McCain to get up there and scold everybody else for not working hard enough, it makes him look like a damn fool. And he made the idiotic statement that when he's president, he won't let Congress take any vacations. If that isn't laughable, I don't know what is. If he becomes president, he's not going to allow Congress to take any vacations. Sure, John. Sure. Sure. I've watched in amazement with a lot of this the past few days with the Bush people, particularly that deal making fun of Obama. I mean, is it any wonder that the Bush-McCain people have jumped all over Obama campaign for daring to suggest that keeping your car tuned up and your tires inflated the right way is a good way to save gas? Don't forget one thing. When you think about that and him, there's little tire gauges that they tried to sell on it for $25 on his website and all. It's important to remember that the people who are waving those idiotic tire gauges around and saying that Obama's full of hot air are the same people they want us to keep burning gas and oil at record levels, which will keep us captive to the foreign oil after all. And don't forget, these are the same people who said it was a good idea to cut rich people's taxes during a war we started so that we can control the world's oil supply. Don't forget that. And these are the same people who are always saying, free market, free market, free market. But when it comes to corporate welfare, they're at the front of the line. And these are the same people who said we couldn't have universal health care because it's too expensive, and yet we're spending $12 billion a month in Iraq. Seems we have money for warfare that would enrich the neocon friends. But we don't have money for programs that would take care of the American people. Odd, don't you think? Very odd. We're going to be back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go away.
Everything is down to me and you. Get out on the trail and out of the range. Working for the man who will bring us change. From east to west, he will be the best, that's true. Obama, Rama, Lama, Lama, Lou. Obama, Rama, Lama, Lama, Lou. Obama, Rama, Lama, Lama, Lou. Barack is the man, oh yes, we. Lama, 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 lama. My little brother told me what to do. 'Cause now is the time to rearrange. Working for the man who will bring us change. From east to west he will be the best, that's true. Obama, lama, 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 lama. Sister told me what to do. Get out of your bed, that ain't so strange. Working for the man who will give us change. From east to west he will be the best, that's true. Obama, Rama, Lama, Lama, Lou. Obama, Rama, Lama, Lama, Lou. Obama, Rama, Lama, Lama, Lou. America is the man, oh yes we can. Obama, Rama, Lama, Lama, Lou. Obama, Rama, Lama, Lama, Lou. Obama, Rama, Lama, Lama, Lou. America's the man, oh yes we can.
this anymore?
Have no intention of taking it anymore. We're going to fight back. That's what we're talking about today, fighting back. I seem to have noticed the Obama campaign, and believe me, I should ask you this question. I'm dancing around here, aren't I? Going from one subject to another. Going off on tangents before I even get to my point. I shouldn't do that as a radio host. I saw some of the talk show people last night talking about how maybe people are just tired of seeing Obama. Maybe that's it. Maybe they're just burned out because they've seen him too much. Isn't that the idea during a campaign? Isn't that why they spend a lot of money, millions and millions of dollars? Isn't that why he's spending $5 million and McCain's spending $6 million during the Olympics to advertise themselves? So now they're saying that maybe this is counterproductive? I don't know how to interpret that. From of course, these political pundits and strategists, I guess that's how they make why they make the big bucks. But it fascinates me. Have you seen too much of Obama? I've seen too much of McCain. I've seen all I can stand of McCain, frankly. But we've been talking about fighting back today and about how I think we need to go on the attack and stay on the attack and don't get in that damn defensive position once again that Dukakis and Al Gore and John Kerry learned so well, that bunker mentality. Just jump in there and close the door and have the other side keep lobbing shells at you. That doesn't work. And I should think we'd all know that by now. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. And by the way, in case any of you haven't seen this, I know many of you have, but I'm gonna talk about it anyway. This tire pressure flap. Of course, Obama has never suggested that proper tire pressure would achieve energy independence. He never said that. McCain has simply been demagoguing this issue, saying that Obama said something that he didn't say, saying that Obama said that that proper tire pressure is better and more immediate response than oil drilling to the nation's pain at the pump. That's not what he said. That's not what he said. He said that that was part of the deal. And so the Auto Alliance, which Charles Toretto, Director of Communications for the Auto Alliance, which represents Chrysler, Ford, and GM, among others, I think we'd have to give them the nod that they know a little bit more about automobiles and tires and so forth than John McCain and his campaign do. I think we'd have to, that's a given, wouldn't we? We'd have to stipulate to that. They came out with these figures. The Department of Energy estimates that 1.2 billion gallons of fuel were wasted in 2005 as a result of driving on underinflated tires. 1.2 billion gallons. Fuel efficiency is reduced by 1% for every 3 pounds per square inch the tires are underinflated. Proper tire inflation can save the equivalent about one tank of gas per year. Proper tire inflation also reduces CO2 emissions. And so Toretto notes that the Auto Alliance sponsored tire pressure checks for members of Congress and their staff last week. Surprisingly, we found that most drivers had tires between 5 and 7 pounds underinflated. Some had tires underinflated by as much as 20 pounds. They probably liked that cushy ride. And that significantly reduced their vehicle's fuel economy. So McCain can stop the crap. We know that what Obama said is absolutely true, and McCain can spin it any way he wants to. It just makes him look like a fool. Well, says I've got a caller on the line, but I don't. Whoever called, just call right back. We'll get to you. I don't know why that happened. In fact, we had two callers on the line, and all of a sudden their light went out. So if you hung up because I was getting windy, why, give us a call back. 866-546-5254. Yes, the 10 cities with the dubious honor of making the list of the most dying cities. Canton, Ohio, number one. Youngstown, Ohio, number two. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, God, it's Kevin from Florida.
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
I'm Kevin from Brooklyn.
there's a bit of difference there.
A little. Yeah, one thing you have to understand about Barack Obama, he cannot be overzealous in his attack, okay, because they're going to come off as him being angry and northern.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Do not have that luxury. Okay, and I have a feeling the Hilton ad, it might have been slipped through some of his people. You got, the game isn't, you know, a slugfest, it's chess. And, you know, it's like in certain situations we do not have the luxury of showing any. And I've been in situations like that in corporate America. I don't have that luxury as a person of color. Because if I do, I'm labeled as being angry and militant.
Well, he's got thousands of surrogates out here, and whatever we do, we just can't allow them to take a beating like
that. No, and he's not. And I think that's why, you know, the whole Paris Hilton thing came out. You know, because if anything, she was very insulting to McCain. She just said the other guy. The other guy is not an insult to me.
Yeah. That was funny. I thought that was really... And, you know, oddly enough, I heard somebody say today the people that filmed that said she'd... Didn't even read that off a script. She memorized it, and she enjoyed doing it, and she made them turkey sandwiches. That was interesting.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, like, blackmail in corporate America or any situation like does not have the luxury of getting angry or showing, you know, defending. We don't. Because if you do, you're considered militant, angry, hostile. And all those things. And this is how these people operate. Anybody who's voting for McCain already think of him being a certain way. So he has to play that role.
Well, it's my belief, and as you well know, I've said it enough on here, that if Obama loses the election, it'll be for one reason and one reason only.
Oh, yeah. And it is. It is. And you're absolutely right. But you have to understand, it's not that he doesn't want to. He really cannot.
Well,
I think he's an intelligent enough candidate to know that he cannot.
Well, maybe that's why this VP choice is going to be really important. Maybe
exactly.
He needs to get somebody that can get out there and fight fire with fire. I understand where you're coming from. That's a perspective that I don't have, of course.
Yes. And I've been in that situation where any time I stood up for myself in corporate America, I was viewed as being militant or hostile.
How did it make you feel?
Angry, because I'm human just as you. If you accuse me, I have the right to defend myself.
Yeah. So I can't get to that place. I can't. Can't get there at all, and I'd like to, but I can't, and I can't imagine, I can't imagine how I would respond. I'm not the kind to...
Does not have the luxury of doing that. Now, you can say what you got to say about Gore, because they do.
Mm-hmm.
But Barack Obama doesn't have that luxury.
Wow. So what you're saying then is, if my skin were black, that I would have to change my way of dealing with that. I wouldn't be able to be me, and I would be a different me, wouldn't I?
Exactly.
Wow, that's hard. You know, that's hard to climb inside that. It really is. I can't imagine it, and I try to always put myself in other people's position, but. Man, that would be frustration.
Because this is why I think he's sticking with the issues. He does make them look like a fool. Because he did it very well last week, the whole tire thing.
Yeah.
He does it, but he does it very subtly and when it's obvious.
Yeah. I'm so frustrated. I'm so frustrated, as are many Obama people right now, that this isn't a 20-point race. It ought to be a 20-point race. It's frustrating for me. But, well, we'll just we'll have all the surrogates and whoever. Who are you betting on for VP?
The guy from Virginia. He needs a southern white male there.
Reigns? Okay, I wonder if he'll be able to get out there and preach a little fire and brimstone. I wonder. I have not heard him talk.
I was hoping for Edwards. I really would have won Edwards.
Yeah, I would like that myself. I would like that. There's so many.
I think Edwards has higher priorities with his wife, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's not forget her.
Oh, absolutely. And isn't this, this could be one of those things. This could be one of those times where he comes up with a choice that we all look at each other and go, what? Where did that come from? I don't know. I have to think.
I'm thinking it's Kane.
All right. Well, that could very well be. I just.
Well, if he really wants to reach across the aisle, Luger. I'm from Nebraska.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting choice as well. Of course, there's always Joe Lieberman, you know.
That would be a thought in the heart of the McCain, because he's a Republican.
Yeah, yeah. Luger's been a middle of the roader.
A true one.
Yeah, he really has. He really has been around a long time, a lot of experience. So. Yeah, he might surprise us. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's coming up pretty soon, though, don't you think? Well, probably once the Olympics get started, they won't do it. They'll wait till after the Olympics.
Yeah, they're both going to be on vacation,
yeah.
I think, for the Olympics.
Well, we won't be, so we have to keep on trucking.
Just keep that in mind, though.
All right, I will. I'll ponder that. Yeah. As always, you give me something good to think about. Kevin, thanks for calling.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, bye now.
God bless. Bye.
You know, that's an aspect that I'm a middle-aged white guy. I can't imagine just what Kevin was talking about. I can't. I'd like to be able to know that. We should all know that. We should all know the frustration and hurt and all that would bring. Be difficult. And it would cause us to change our personalities. We don't think so, but we might end up doing that. I don't know. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to call the program. We've got John McCain out there this week, and Obama. He's always happy to recite chapter and verse on all the times that McCain has voted against renewable energy. And here's a little list that came from July 21st. McCain opposed legislation extending the renewable energy production tax credit. He voted against the recent study and concluded more than 116,000 jobs could be lost if the tax credit is not extended, and McCain opposed that. McCain repeatedly voted against tax credits for renewable energy production. McCain opposed the farm bill that contained $300 million in renewable biofuels funding. McCain repeatedly voted against renewable energy mandates and said, "I'm not one who believes that we need to subsidize things." McCain opposed a fiscal stimulus package that included up to $3,000 in tax rebates for plug-in hybrid or fully electric vehicles. McCain called a $15 million earmark for research for the development of an electric car egregious. And the McCain campaign is guided by lobbyists. That includes 18 campaign advisors, 18, who have lobbied for the oil industry. I think that tells you where the McCain campaign is grounded, does it not? 18 campaign advisors who have lobbied for the oil industry. We know where their hearts are, do we not? Someone writes that they wanted me to finish that list of cities that are dying quickly. Forbes magazine had this in, and if you don't subscribe to Forbes magazine, number one was Canton, Ohio. These places where unemployment rate, population decline, and economic growth were all figured into this. The most dying city in the country, Canton, Ohio. Number two, Youngstown, Ohio. Number three, Flint, Michigan. Number four, Scranton, Pennsylvania. Number five, Dayton, Ohio. Number six, Cleveland, Ohio. Number seven, Springfield, Massachusetts. Number eight, Buffalo. Number nine, Detroit. And number 10, Charleston, West Virginia. Oh, my God, what a list. What a list. towns that once upon a time prospered. Towns that once upon a time were teeming with new immigrants. People came here from other countries, worked in the steel mills, worked in the mines, worked here, worked there. Towns that were middle-class towns. Places like Canton and Youngstown, Ohio, are the epitome of middle-class towns. Hard-working people, made good money, spent the money, lived well, didn't get rich, raised their families, loved their communities. And now these cities are going to waste. And what a shame that is. What a shame that is. Canton, Ohio, home of the Timken Roller Bearing Company, home of the Hoover Vacuum Cleaner Company. Timken is going down the tubes in Canton, Ohio, anyway. Hoover, I don't know if they're still there or not. I think they've laid off a bunch of people. Youngstown had steel mills, part of the Steel Valley that stretches across to Pittsburgh. Flint, the manufacturing jobs are gone, the automobile, big Buick plant up there. Dayton, Ohio, I'm just going from memory here, was the home of National Cash Register, tons of jobs there. Can't think of the other one. Cleveland, as you all know, is drying up and blowing away from foreclosures once again. It's sad to take a look at that list of once great and proud cities in this country. I hope they can rebound somehow, but don't see it in the immediate future, that's for sure. 866-546-5254, if you'd like to join us here at the program again today. Do you think, and I wanted to bring this up today, do you think that Israel will strike Iran and draw us into that mess? Israel's confident that they could cause significant damage to Iran's nuclear program, even if they wouldn't be able to totally wipe it out. They're not sure of that from what I understand. But to that end, Israel's beefing up its capabilities for a possible preemptive strike against Iran. And to be fair, Iran has shown no signs of suspending their uranium enrichment. A lot of people think they could enrich enough of uranium to have a nuclear bomb by next year, 2010 at the latest. They say they're not doing it. The Israelis think they are. The Israelis are purchasing more fighter planes that can reach Iran in addition to submarines that fire nuclear-armed warheads. And they've got intelligence agents inside of Iran. This is something we'll have to watch closely. This is something could happen. I would say something that's outside of our control, but I don't believe that it is outside of our control. I believe that if Israel does that, it'll be with the blessing of the Bush administration. There's no question in my mind about that. Where are we going here? Don't want to get a big subject started because we don't have that long to go in the program. And we've got evidence out here now. I see. I did want to also mention, we talked yesterday about the Mr. Ivins, the anthrax mailer, and the FBI has come out with what they say is more findings of his guilt, they think. He allegedly gave phony anthrax samples to the FBI. Why would he do that, one wonders? He did not provide a sufficient alibi about his late-night work at the lab during the attacks. He tried to lay blame for the mailings on an unidentified worker. He immunized himself for anthrax and yellow fever in the weeks before the attacks. And the FBI documents also describe Ivins as a deeply troubled individual. He, as you know, this biodefense scientist committed suicide earlier this week after he apparently learned that he was going to be charged by the government. And as for why Ivins carried out the attacks, investigators speculate it may have been to demonstrate a need for anthrax vaccine on which he was working. The project was reportedly in danger of being terminated. And so FBI investigators yesterday held a private meeting with family members of the victims in which they told them the case was being closed. Another meeting was held with congressional staff to inform them that there were no suspects other than Ivins. And do remember that the anthrax-tainted letters were sent to the offices of Senator Patrick Leahy and former Senate Majority Leader Tom Daschle, as well as several media outlets, clear back in October of 2001. Wow. Speaking of people that are allegedly crazy, did you see Glenn Beck's? Glenn Beck and his allegations about this movie, this Batman movie that's out. Take a listen to this about how he equates Bush to Batman. I thought this was one of the more absurd comparisons that I've ever heard. But then Glenn Beck, what can you say?
Blair's rendition, at one point the Morgan Freeman character says to Batman, wait a minute, hang on, you're eavesdropping on everyone in Gotham? And Batman says, yes, to stop this terrorist. Morgan Freeman says, I can't be a part of it. And yet, Morgan Freeman does become a part of it, and they find the Joker. One of the ways they find the Joker is through eavesdropping. I mean, the parallels here of what's going on is, to me, stunning.
You know, you're not the only one. This kind of got started with an op-ed piece in the Wall Street Journal by mystery writer Andrew Clavin. Let's read what he said. He said, "The Dark Knight is at some level praise to the fortitude and moral courage that has been shown by George W. Bush in this time of terror and war. Like Bush, Batman is vilified and despised for confronting terrorists in the only terms they understand." That said, Glenn, and when you think about Hollywood and how much conservatives think that it's just the liberal capital of the world, how could Hollywood and their producers possibly be praising a conservative administration?
Oh, I have to tell you, that was the shock. I sat there in the movie theater with my family, and I looked at them, and I said, I must have missed the message here that, you know, America is evil and the terrorist somehow or another was misunderstood. I have no idea how this movie was made. I don't know how else to read this movie, though. It's shocking. And one of the great things about it is that Gotham is worth saving, that the people actually do the right thing in the end. And the other thing that I had a private conversation with President Bush in the Oval Office, and I'm not really a fan of President Bush, and it was about a year ago. And he was talking about the troops and the war on terror, and he looked at me and he said, Glenn, I have to tell you something. I am willing to be hated for the next 50 years. I am willing to die as the worst president ever, because on the war on terror, I know it has to be fought. I know we're dealing with evil here. And you know what? It's exactly the message that Batman carries. You know what? I'm going to be the Dark Knight. I'll be the guy who cleans it up, because somebody has to, because the red tape and all the rules, and this is the movie, all the rules are going to get us all killed.
Interesting perspective. They're forecasting that.
Interesting perspective indeed, that Glenn Beck thinks that Bush is a hero just like Batman. Bush saving his version of Gotham. Somebody tell me, please, how does Glenn Beck keep a show on the air? How can it be? How can there be enough people to watch that program to think that this guy is... I hear something like this, watch something like this. I hear the likes of Michael Savage and Mark Levin, and I just shake my head. I just shake my head. First of all, with Mark Levin, is that guy not the most annoying person in all of radio? The voice that he's got, Mark Levin? Oh, my God. Oh, boy, is he a wild one. I'm fascinated that somebody would listen to that program. I really am. I don't know how you could take it for very long. His voice is just as annoying as Laura Ingraham. By the way, is she back yet? She was having big contract negotiations with her syndicator. I don't know if she's back yet or not. I really don't. Well, we had a lot more we were going to get to today, but we didn't, as usual. We always run out of time before we run out of things to talk about. But we'll be back again next week, and there'll be lots more to talk about. And always look forward to that. I want to thank you for being with us this week. We enjoyed it very much, as always. Always enjoy hearing your input and getting your emails, and keep them coming. Always, it's my pleasure. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Billy Shears, music director. And don't forget, you heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Later, gang.